morning. Every morning. But
what a beautiful day. It's nice and soft, comfortable and cool. What a beautiful space to sit in. Thank you very much, Shokai and Mark, for hosting us today. You know, I saw years ago a movie called Vanya on 42nd Street, which was basically a movie of these Broadway actors getting together in someone's house to do Uncle Vanya, and the movie, best part of the movie for me was, you know, that they come in and they got their coffee from Starbucks, and they're talking back and forth, and they're moving their furniture around to set it up for their rehearsal. And then, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes into watching all these actors get ready, all of a sudden you realize they're doing the play, and you're not quite sure how that happened. It's, you know, from, oh, this coffee is really good, to doing Chekhov. And it's like a seamless transition, and that's sort of how I felt we got our stuff together today. You know, we were in this beautiful house in Massachusetts, and we were getting people trained and bringing cushions in, and then all of a sudden here we are, a sangha having an all-day retreat in silence, just created seamlessly out of the bricks and mortar of our everyday life, and at the end it will disappear back into our everyday life. I asked Soshin what she thought the group would like to hear from me today, and she said, you might like to hear about the teacher-student relationship and the role that the teacher plays in Zen. And that's kind of a difficult and touchy subject, but it is a very good topic, because I can see that we have people who study in a number of places, people who have teachers, people who might not have teachers. I see a Zen Mountain Monastery robe out there, which I wore for about 8 years, and got excellent training. Then I began studying with Enkyo Roshi, got excellent training. And it was very different, a very different training. We have some people here who have studied with the Boundless Way people, and I'm not too familiar with that sangha. And we have people here who have studied with my Dharma sister, Anwaku Sensei. And I guess that most people have had a sampling of different teachers. And I think you must have been struck, as I have, and at this point I've met quite a few teachers. None of them are the same. So my two teachers were Daido Roshi and Enkyo Roshi. And when I went to Daido Roshi, I got Daido Roshi's Dharma. And when I studied with Enkyo Roshi, I got Enkyo Roshi's Dharma. And were they the same? same Dharma? Or were they different? Daito Roshi was, he had an air about him. He created this wonderful community at Zen Mountain Monastery. He was a creator, an empire builder, and he had this very air of authority about him. And, you know, he was the abbot of a monastery. And so he projected that, and the people at the monastery, especially the ones who were close to him, served him. And so, you know, when he spoke, and he often spoke with a lot of humor and self-deprecation, often, but he was the abbot, and you paid attention to that. And it was a great place for me to begin my Zen practice, because I didn't know anything, and I really thought, well, this is the way it's been done since the Buddha's time. And I didn't know that half the stuff Daito had just made up. But, you know, the people there told you, sit here, sit there, bow this way, turn that way, wear this, don't wear that. And when I was just starting my practice, that was great, because I really didn't want to do a lot of thinking. You know, my opinions about what I was supposed to wear, where I was supposed to stand, how I didn't know any of that stuff. And so there was a form, and I was drilled in the form, and once I had gotten used to the form, I didn't have to do a lot of thinking. So it made things very easy for me. And then Enkyo Roshi, who also studied with Daito, we were Dharma brother and sister. She was like my older sister there. She was quite different from Daito. She also had an air of authority, but she took a lot of pains, you know, to be on the same level that you were, that she were, you and she were just people practicing the Dharma together. She didn't deliver opinions from on high, and if you asked her how to do something, she wouldn't say, this is the way to do it. She'd, well, some people do it this way, some people do it this way. We usually do it this way here. Does that feel right to you? And very, very different. So, it could be a little confusing. There was one point in my practice where I was practicing with Daito at Mount Tremper and with Enkyo in New York, and I would go to both of them for interview, and I would get confirmed on one koan by Daito and not confirmed by Enkyo. Well, wait a minute. Which one is the right answer? So this business of teachers can be very puzzling, because if there is an it, how do you know who has it when they're all so different? How do you decide whether a teacher is a true teacher or not when they can't even agree on the same koan? The business of being a teacher is very it's kind of a paradox. because, you know, if you've hung around Zen circles long enough, almost every teacher will say, well, I have nothing to teach, you know. All right, but what do you mean by that? What are you supposed to make of that statement? And it goes right back to the Buddha, you know, who in the Diamond Sutra says, well, what do you think, Subhuti? Does the Buddha have any particular way or doctrine to teach? And Subhuti says, no world-honored one, as I understand it. The Buddha has no such doctrine or dharma to teach. The Buddha says, very good, Subhuti. So what's going on here? What are we studying? What are the teachers teaching? And when Soshin asked me to talk about teachers and teaching, this koan came to my mind that I thought kind of got at the paradoxes of it. It's about Wang Bo, a great teacher of the 9th century in China. And Wang Bo, instructing the community, said, all of you people are gobblers of dregs. If you go on traveling around this way, where will you have today? Do you know that there are no Zen teachers in all of China? At that time, a monk came forward and said, then what about those in various places who order followers and lead communities? And Wang Bo said, I do not say there is no Zen. It's just that there are no teachers. So I think this monk's question is a very good one. If you say there are no teachers, then who are these characters who sit up here and wear a robe or a brown rock suit and spout off at you? Or what are they offering you, if not the teaching? Wang Bo says, I don't say there is no Zen. It's just that there are no teachers. The commentary on this koan, I think, tells a story about Wang Bo and his teacher that I think is very clarifying. Wang Bo's teacher was Pai Chang, and as Wang Bo was taking his leave of Pai Chang, Pai Chang asked him, where are you going? To pay my respects to great Master Ma. Now Master Ma was Pai Chang's teacher, so he was Wang Bo's Dharma grandfather. In other words, I'm going to see the old man, I'm going to see your boss. And Wang Bo said, great Master Ma has already passed on. And of course that literally means, you know, Wang Bo had died at this point. But also, I think one could say with equal justice that my first teacher, Daido Roshi, has passed on literally in 2009, and my heart teacher, Enkyo Roshi, I think, although she's alive and well, and you can visit her any time in New York, she has also passed on. She's not here today. Or is she? And I would say with equal justice that Ryotan Sensei has already passed on, and Anoraku Sensei has already passed on, because all of us are constantly passing on. All of us are different from day to day, always changing, always influencing and being influenced by our environment, passing on and passing on and passing on. You know, I was a child right in this area, half an hour from here in Springfield and Longmeadow, and we moved away when I was 9. Well, where is that child? Is he here or is he not here? Where is 1960? Is it here or has it passed on? What do you think? Anyway, so the story continues. Guangbo asked his teacher, well, what did Master Ma say to you? And Pai Chang said, when Ma Su saw me approach, he raised his whisk. That was his teaching. Sometimes there was another Zen master who would, Gutai, who would raise the finger. This, Master Ma raised a whisk. And Pai Chang says, and so I asked him, teacher, are you attached to this action or are you not attached to this action? And Matsu then took the whisk and hung it up on his chair. There was a long silence at that point. You know how some of these old Zen masters could keep silent. I know it's good at that too. But just sit there and give you the hairy eyeball. Finally, after this long silence, Matsu said to Pei Chang, all right, later on when you're flapping your lips, how will you help people? Flapping your lips means when you're a teacher. When you're doing what I'm doing right now. Later on, when you're flapping your lips, how will you help people? And Pai Chang said, I took the whisk and I held it up. And Matsu asked me, are you attached to this action or not attached to this action? And I took the whisk and I hung it up on the chair. At which point, Matsu drew himself up and Matsu was the Dharma grandfather of the Rinzai school where they go into that kind of stuff. He drew himself up and gave a shout that left me deaf for 3 days. And when he heard this, Wang Bo unconsciously stuck out his tongue in awe. I love that. It continues. Pai Chang said to Wang Bo, after this, won't you be a successor of Master Ma? And Wang Bo says, no, today because of the master's recital, I've gotten to see great Master Ma's wonderful capacity and his great function. But if I were to succeed to Master Ma in the future, I would be bereft of descendants. I wouldn't have taught anyone at all. Pai Chang said, "It is so. It is so. If your view equals your teacher, you have half your teacher's virtue. Only when wisdom goes beyond your teacher are you worthy to pass on the Dharma." Now this statement, and I heard this very early on, really, really puzzled me for a very, very long time, that until you surpass your teacher, you're not worthy to receive the Dharma transmission. I said, what the hell could that mean? Does that mean, that Daido Roshi was greater than Maizumi Roshi? That Enkyo Roshi was greater than Maizumi Roshi and Bernie Glassman? Does it mean that all of them, many generations on, had far surpassed Dogen Zenji, the founder of our lineage? I mean, that made no sense to me, that, you know, us people in modern times driving around in our cars and trying to steal space and time to do a little Dharma practice together, that how could we be said to surpass the great masters of all people, like the people I'm talking about now, Pai Chang, Wang Bo, Matsu, some of the greatest in recorded history? What would it mean to surpass them? And in his final statement to Wang Bo, I think Pei Chang clarifies this. He says, "As your view is right now, it seems that you have the ability which transcends any teacher. As your view is right now, as you are this moment, your view transcends the view of Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha's teaching was 2,500 years ago under those causes and conditions. Enkyo Roshi's teaching is in the 21st century. My teaching is in this room, in this place, half an hour from where I was born, at this moment. Your teaching is the teaching of this moment. And in that teaching, you surpass all the sages and ancestors who have ever lived. The trick is, you need to realize this. We always feel either that we're getting closer to something, like the Dharma is something out there, and we're getting closer to it, closer to enlightenment, you know, oh, you're getting warm, you're getting warm, your mind is peaceful, your mind is calm, everything looks beautiful, you're getting very warm, you're getting very warm, you're going to get it any minute now. And then, unfortunately, probably more often, you're cold, you're getting colder and colder, oh man, your legs hurt, you're so tired. You don't get this stuff. You wish you weren't even here. This This is awful. Oh, you're so cold, you're so far away from the Buddha Dharma, you'll never get it. And we tend to go oscillate back and forth between these two poles. Is there someone who needs to sit down?
Someone just dropped something off.
Well, what if we really took Shakyamuni at his word that there was no particular dharma to comprehend, no particular doctrine to be taught? Then we would realize that there isn't an it out there to move toward, or to move away from, or as we say over and over again, this is it. There's no moving toward, there's no moving away from. In the midst of birth and death, there's no birth, no death. And this is the teacher's task. They call the teachers, Zen teachers, thieves. And the reason they do that is because they're always taking things away from you. I mean, if you're really feeling down and not so good and you're at the beginning stages of practice, they'll give you things. They'll give you teachings. They'll show you how to sit, they'll do all that. And then later on, your wonderful teacher, you'll say something that your wonderful teacher told you last year that you thought was so wonderful, and he'll go, "What are you talking about? That has no basis at all." You'll say, "I've really realized everything is one." Teacher will go, "No, it's not." I finally realized that the Dharma is all about working effectively with differences. No, it's not. I've realized that my mind, just as it is the mind of the Buddha. No, it's not. I've realized that my life and my experience in the moment are the teachings. No, they're not. We all want to find a place to sit down. We all want an it. We all want a particular doctrine. Be in the moment. Be mindful. And over again, if we have a teacher who we have a good connection with, the teacher at the appropriate time will take all of that away. All of it. Till there's nothing left to stand on, to sit on, no place to rest. No place to avoid passing on moment after moment. Nothing to grasp. Nothing, nothing, nothing. And we think we're going to fall down an endless black pit. And we don't. We bow when we're supposed to bow. We put on our robes at the start of the day. We take them off at the end of the day. When we drive, we put our car in first gear, and then in second gear, we're driving the standard up to fourth gear. Oh, so my ordinary life is the way. No, it's not. So, as most of you know, studying Zen is getting knocked down again and again and again. Usually not by your teacher, usually just in the course of practice. But, you know, if the ground is getting too firm under your feet, then your teacher has to do that for you. And then finally, the student gets to a point where he's lost Buddhism, he's lost Zen, he's lost enlightenment, he's lost delusion. He can't be knocked down anymore. There's no place to get knocked down to. Everywhere is home. There's nothing to achieve and nothing to lose. And so then that student is ready to share his Dharma or her Dharma with others. Then the student will surpass you, because the student's Dharma will be unique and resplendent and not duplicable by any other being who has ever been or whoever will be. And then the teacher's work is done.